Our celebration of Bob Dylan's 70th birthday continues with a conversation from our archives. We interviewed Suze Rodelow back in 2008, shortly after the release of her book, A Freewheelin' Time, a memoir of Greenwich Village in the 60s. She was the girlfriend of Bob Dylan. Her iconic photo with Dylan on the streets of Greenwich Village appeared on the cover of his second album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan. Suze died at the end of February this year. Her book is about more than just her relationship with Dylan, and I started out by asking about her background.
It's interesting that your background, your parents' background, you refer to yourself as a red diaper baby, put you on the outside of what people see as a conformist culture in the 1950s in America. And it would seem that Greenwich Village was certainly a magnet for all those people. Was it different for you, though, coming from such, you know, a subway ride away as opposed to traveling from across the country?
Well, it's more a question of where I grew up in Queens. I was an outsider because of my parents' politics, because we didn't go to a church or a and most people went to either a synagogue, a church, or somewhere. And we didn't do that. It was always realizing I didn't fit in. We had books on bookshelves, no TV, and my parents played all kinds of music. And it was always that feeling of being an outsider. So it was to go someplace else where there were people who would think the way I did and believed and listen to the music I was listening to, because then it was the folk music was kind of tied with the left-wing men. It was because the popular music, why I was conformist, it was all very, I don't know, sugary things, songs like How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, and very superficial, silly songs. And rock and roll hadn't been truly born yet. There were rhythm and blues, but that too was outside the mainstream.
Now, this book, it's funny, when you read your introduction to the book, you talk about your reluctance to discuss your relationship with Bob Dylan, this time period. Now it's kind of been the elephant in the room of your life, and I can totally understand that. But what I'm curious is how you made the decision to write this after resisting, talking about this for so long.
Well, I guess it was time, and it was the way it was presented to me. I was actually asked to write a book. I didn't go seeking it. And at first, the reaction was, oh, no, because it was a knee-jerk reaction, years and years of saying no. So this time, the way it was presented, that they wanted my life story, why a young girl came to the village in the first place, what it was like, in addition to the love story, my story. And I thought that made that was more appealing. And it was that presentation that made me reflect and think that this might be the right time. I could do it in this way. And also all the people close to me, when I told them that I had gotten this offer to write a book, I all thought they'd sympathize with my fears, etc., and reservations. Instead, they all said, great, you should. And it was also the Scorsese film, the No Direction Home, that film on Bob Dylan, No Direction Home, and that made me realize there were a lot of stories to tell within the context of the way we lived our lives then. Yes, Bob Dylan was the focus of that film, but Scorsese did such a good job of showing the social, the political, in all the arts, how things were changing.
We're talking with Suze Rodelow about times in Greenwich Village in the 1960s in conjunction with her book, A Freewheelin' Time. And the title of the book, of course, comes from the cover shot of the Bob Dylan album, Freewheelin', that has the picture of you and Bob on what street in New York is it?
That's Jones Street. Jones Street, which is... and behind us is Bleecker Street, and we're walking towards West 4th Street.
Now, it's really interesting to hear your description in the book of the photo session, because you kind of had to be coaxed out there to do this pose. And were you surprised when the album came out with you in the picture?
Yes, I didn't expect them to choose that, because many were taken of Bob by himself, and outside and inside. So it was a surprise to see that this became the cover. And I still think Don Hunstein took the pictures, and he just had this idea. He told us to walk up and down the street, and it was very, very cold. You can see our red noses in the picture, but we really didn't think that would be chosen necessarily. And I think whoever the art director was, it was really quite a choice, because it was very unusual for the time to have such a spontaneous-looking picture. Most pictures on albums in that period were very stylized and very formal.
It's also very funny because you had launched a lot of young women going out and buying that length of boots, too. So you inadvertently became a fashion...
a fashion queen, huh?
Yeah, which hardly seems to be your role.
No.
The other thing that's interesting is your involvement with politics seemed to come because of your, where you were from, who your parents were, seemed to precede a lot of what we see as the 60s politics. Your work with CORE and later on your trip to Cuba and other things that you were involved with. Were these things that that Bob was aware of when you started going out, or did he discover a lot of them from you, or how did that work out?
Well, it was in the air. The civil rights movement was, I don't even think it was called the civil rights movement that early. It was fighting for integration, they called it, because the schools were still segregated, and the Supreme Court had declared illegal the segregation of schools only in 1954, and this was in the early 60s. And so there was a lot going on at that time. To have finally civil rights was being publicized, and there were the freedom rides and whatnot. And Bob came from Minnesota, Minneapolis. I don't know how much he knew, but I certainly was very much aware of this, having grown up the way I grew up. And it was an exchange of information. His interests in music were more concentrated than mine, but I was interested and had passions about so many things, so he picked up a lot on that. But we really fed each other's curiosities. We were young and curious about everything and in search of the poets.
Yeah, it's one of the things you have to keep pinching yourself as you read this book, to realize how young both of you were. You 17, mm-hmm. he 20 when you met. And as wonderful and evocative the description of a young love affair is in the book, what really kind of rang home to me in the book, and I thought was kind of extraordinary, is how it ended for the two of you, because of what was happening in Bob's life, what was happening in yours, how you were moving away, and really about your inability or not wanting to kind of play the role of Bob Dylan's girlfriend, or I don't know if I'm expressing that as a way.
No,
you
I
would.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But that strikes me as very grown up for somebody who would have been at that point as 21 years old. Did you have a lot of insight into that as you looked back?
The thing was, I never had, this was pre-feminism time, and in those years, I just remember being, maybe resentful is the right word, that I couldn't go to the movies alone, I couldn't sit in a cafe. You couldn't, as a girl, if you'd sit around, that means you were literally bait. I mean, somebody could hit on you, it would be justified. And it was an awkward feeling. I didn't like it. I wanted to be like the guys, to be able to go and sit in a cafe, go to the movies, do whatever I want. And I didn't have the words for it. And being the chick to this guy and being called, you're Bob's chick, or you're his, not even his girlfriend, his chick, was awful. I felt like I wasn't a full person. I was an appendage. And I began seeing it as that I was another string on his guitar, and I didn't want to just be that. I was still finding my own life and the things I wanted to do, and how could I just sit back and smile sweetly as people circled around him, bees to a honeypot. He was the mover and the shaper of the 60s that he became, but it was to be next to him. It was as if you didn't exist, and I wasn't competing with him. It wasn't that. It was just that I didn't feel that I was a person even anymore. From just, you're ignored. People trample over you and run to him, and it was not a role I wanted to play.
And
I hope that's clear.
No, that's quite clear. And it's so breaking up is not only the breaking up of a love affair, which is intense in and of itself, but there seemed to be, obviously, as you state, a lot more involved with it. And that must have been extremely difficult for you at the time. And you sort of roll over this a bit in the book, but there you seem to have had a breakdown at some point trying to deal with this. I don't know if that was the cause of it or whatever.
Well, it was all that. It was it was the intensity of a young love. And when, you know, you're tortured when you're young, and it meant a lot. And I also felt very isolated because he was who he was, and I felt that I couldn't, nobody would understand, I couldn't talk to anybody, and it was the pressures, neither my mother or my sister approved of him, so I felt very much alone and isolated and nobody to turn to, because you couldn't really turn to anybody because this was almost a, he was such a public figure by then. So that, I think, contributed more than anything else to the breakup, to my nervous breakdown. That's what it was. I didn't know where to turn. That was why.
And how did you pick up your life, and what have you been doing? I don't need every decade.
The last 45 years, what have I been doing?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Time flies. Well, it was recovering from that and finding my own life. Finally, it was actually better than being around this. I began to think of it as this dark folk music. I began to hate it and not wanting to be around it anymore. But once I got back on my own two feet and began doing things on my own, the trip to Cuba was one way, but then the politics of that got too heavy. But it was more, you know, again, I was young and still discovering and had many passions, things I was interested in. So it's really self-discovery all along and how you want to live your life. And I think I learned very early on that fame is really scary, and it's not something that you can, I mean, he survived it. I think it's a wonderful thing Bob Dylan survived fame. I mean, riches and glory aside, it is very difficult because you're always being tested. What's the next great genius thing you're going to do after you do something? And you have to do it again and again and again. It's a lot of pressure.
Suze Roydelow, thank you so much for talking with us today, and thanks for the book too. It's a great read.
Oh, thank you very much. I enjoyed this. Thank you.
Suze Roydelow, A Freewheel in Time, a memoir of Greenwich Village in the 60s, is her book. That interview first aired when the book came out in 2008. Suze passed away earlier this year at the end of February from lung cancer.